once again, I just want to introduce Crazy Talks for those who have come before and those who are here for the first time. Crazy Talks is a community-driven event. It is not funded by any, anybody, except me. Just my little self. There's no mental health agencies, progressive, community, backward, pharmaceutical, or otherwise. There's no university program, research, study. There's nothing of that going on tonight. And this is not a therapeutic exercise, you'll be happy to know. This is just a simple community event. This is just a bunch of people getting together, and we're celebrating mad something or other tonight. It happens to be mad theater, mad culture. Things that have been done over the years for and with mad people. I'm going to leave it at that and let these folks introduce themselves. I would like to welcome the Friendly Spike Theater Band tonight. Thank you.
Okay, my name is Ruth, and I'm a director and founder of Friendly Spike. And Henrik, did you want to introduce yourself?
My name is Henrik Kartna. I'm a writer, actor, and mental health advocate.
Yeah, you want me. Okay, my name is Heinz. I'm
come up here.
A man by all means. I'm doing actually everything what has to do with theater or artistic pursuits, including community activism all over the place.
And I'll just let another member of our group just came in. She'll just say her name.
I'm Honey Novick. Hi, everybody.
Hi.
Okay, so now tonight's presentation, because we've been going since 1989, so there's a large body of work to cover. However, what we did in the summer of 2014 was we got stories from the actors and put them in a scrapbook. And the scrapbook takes a format of a theater review. You know, like Canadian Theater Review, and you flip through and there's headlines and they lead into a play. Well, the actors, they were like gonzo journalists. They find a headline, and that's my headline, and get into the story and tell their story within the context on the stage of Friendly Spike. Because we had a lot of pictures and that kind of thing. So we made a scrapbook, it's here, and we're just basing our presentation on that. Heinz is going to read some of his story. Henrik's going to read some of his. Honey, she's the vocal director, music director, and also she's a co-actor in one of Henrik's pieces. But I'm going to deviate from the scrapbook to begin because I have a really good mad memory, a mad story. And this memory took place on a Sunday afternoon in January 1994. And I'm sitting on the step outside the Poor Alec Theatre on Brunswick Street in Toronto. Now, I had just finished the final performance of Marked Living with a Stigma, which was a play about a woman's journey through the psychiatric system. And although the woman that I was playing was a fictional character, she was a composite of five individual psychiatric survivors who shared their stories with us as research for the play. When I developed the character, I included my own schemata in the mix. So really, we were six. And we called ourselves Debbie Pearlie. Now, after playing Debbie Pearlie, I would always feel like I had had an emotional workout. Because although the play had a consistent through line, Debbie Pearlie challenged the system at a human rights inquiry. So we'd always go back to the human rights inquiry throughout the play. But things happened in that play, and there was a hospital stay and an escape and a breakup with her boyfriend, and it just a lot of stuff happened to this gal. So I always felt like I'd gone through the ringer after playing her. But also, too, keep in mind, this story takes place after delivering a final performance at a pay-what-you-can matinee. So it was a packed house. And they loved it because word was out in the community that something groovy was happening. And who was in the audience, who I did not know at that time, was dear Eric Fabris. So here I am, sitting on the step outside the Poor Alex Theater, and Eric comes up and sits down beside me, and he looks at me, and he says, "Are you a survivor?" And I thought for a minute, and I said, "Yeah, I am a survivor." And he kissed me on the forehead, and then off he went. Yeah. So now to end the book. Okay, so now I'm going back to the book. I just thank you very much for listening to that lovely, lovely memory, mad memory. Okay, now in 1989, in Toronto, a group of actors and writers, myself included, began the Friendly Spike Theatre Band as a response to elitist and exclusive theatre. We aim to bring theatre back to the people. And we have a picture in the scrapbook. These scrapbooks, you can look around. It says here on page 3, there's a picture of us. And the headline is, "Bringing Theater Back to the People." We actually got this printed in the Scarborough Mirror. Why? Because I had my teenage years in Scarborough. So I phoned up the Scarborough Mirror to try to get some publicity. And I said, "I've got a hook. I'm a local girl who's made her own play and the theater company. And we want the world to know about it." So Bringing Theater Back to the People was in Scarborough Mirror, 1989. So that's there. That's in the vintage scrapbook. Yeah, the detail and vintage pictures, all formatted in a theater review, and actors enter through the headline. Now, drawing on
German writer,
playwriter, yeah. Activist.
Bertolt Brecht.
So drawing on his theory and theater of the oppressed, our plays remain collectively developed. That means when we do a play, even if there's like a single writer, should I just keep going?
Sure.
Go.
Okay. So even if there's a single writer has written a play, it's always collectively developed. And there's a reason for that. We're doing it together, and everything that everybody has to say is important. And we always include the people that they represent. But Mark Living with a Stigma, the play I was telling you about that was at the Poor Alec in 1994, however, it was the first production where we intentionally cast members of the psychiatric survivor community and documented the movement. And this begins a pattern in the company, a pattern of struggle. And we still deal with it. We struggle. And I think that has something to do with who we are, our position, our political position. And I think, you know, when I did my MA, I saw in history that this happens. People struggle through history and they express it. So it's just all part of a tradition. So, and at first we started representing mental health issues in our cultural context because most of us who began the company had lived experiences in their lives and that wanted to express. It was like a natural thing. But also, too, at the same time, we were becoming politicized. We were part of this great big ball of dirt that Mr. John McKenzie was talking about, And we thought needed to be documented somehow, and we did it in the only way that we could, which was on stage. So many psychiatric survivors at the time really dug Mark Living with a Stigma, and they breathed their energy and driving force into it, so much so that we staged a remount of the play in 1995, and we made a film adaptation of the story, which was released in 1996. And we have that film on DVD. It's in the Psychiatric Survivor Archives. Anybody can go and watch it at any time. I have copies of it. Anybody can get that at any time.
Could I interject here really quick as though on something you mentioned a DVD that I would like to know if anybody's interested in gathering together DVDs or songs or whatever and offer them up for sale on the web to create a foundation for housing.
That's a really great idea, and I want to continue that conversation, but I want to stick to our presentation right now.
Of course,
but
yeah.
let's talk for sure, man. Okay, so now, so we staged a remount of Mark because it was so popular, and we also made a movie out of it. So we had that. The remount of the play was at a place called Symptom Hall. It's been torn down, but it was a hall that we rented for a couple of weeks, and it was on Claremont Street in Toronto. And after each performance, the late, great Bruce Cattle, who's still known and loved, and he was the host of Caffeine Free Radio on CIUT. So we had a voice speaking for us. He would host, after we did the play each night, something called the Unity Cabaret, which was a series of acts and academic voices and cultural voices. And it was groundbreaking because at the time, Jeffrey Rayom came and introduced his psychiatric patient's history, which was not nearly a book at that point. He introduced some letters. And that was it. And then Barbara Everett, who went on to become a big heavyweight, she introduced a little concept called empowerment. So it was groundbreaking. But also, too, the music was stellar. And I can't go on any longer because that's where a local singer-songwriter comes in.
Naturally, me. My name is Science. I'm a psychiatric survivor, community activist, singer-songwriter, multimedia artist, really. And I use these creative talents to actually further the drive for social justice. And I've been doing that for almost 30 years now. I connected to Friendly Spike at this event in Symptom Hall, marked. And it's really interesting that Eric played actually a part in that thing. He was a waiter. He was very waiterish. Yeah, no, I know. And I met Eric actually before through the Patients' Council at Queen Street. So he said, there's something going on, why don't you come? So I did go down there and had some fun and looked, saw the play. So that was really good. Before, in 1964, I was introduced actually to theater in a really small town in Germany named Lambrecht, which
it's
a long time ago. And then in 1990, here in Toronto, I participated actually on a play around homeless with Mixed Company, which used actually the theater of the oppressed form which was developed by Augusto Boal, to actually bring homelessness closer to the people and create actually some avenues to change that. And that opened up actually my eyes that I can use theater as a tool to make more justice happen. Eric, as I said, had a small part in this little play, And the musical score of the play, Marked, was written by Ken Innes and Bill Urich, who, like Ken, is still a partner in the company, and Bill is coming in as a musician. And they worked actually together at that day with Stuart Mayer, who was one of the previous chairs of the Patients' Council,
right.
Plus a lot of other little positions. He worked at the Scott Mission for a while, and Roger Ellis. And Roger is actually a Juno Award-winning recording artist with Edward Baer, which is a 70s kind of band.
Larry Eboy was their lead singer.
Right, Larry. Yeah. Actually, Larry is in Toronto and works with Roger.
And the guy that worked the lights in the band that I was in the 60s ended up, I think he was playing bass or something for Edward Baer.
Great.
Danny Marks was in
Danny
the
Marks, yeah.
Danny,
yeah.
Danny was in there. And after Danny, actually, Roger took the part Danny when Danny left. So they did made a Juno Award, and then at the Unity Cabaret with Bruce, we all came together and we played music and made really good music together, and that was really fun. Then actually with Roger and Stuart, we founded actually a small little band called The Stuarts, and we played actually the big homelessness memorial down at Nathan Phillips Square, and we started up actually the Rupert Hotel Memorial, which we did actually for almost 20 years. The Rupert Hotel, where people died actually in a hotel fire, that was 1989. So, and from there, in that fire, 10 people lost their lives. And I united with them and we played and we had a great time. And through that experience and through seeing the play, I actually learned something. That theater can become a form of activism to open actually people's eyes and educate them.
Yeah.
So Friendly Spike draw me in. And from this point, I was actually really into the whole kind of thing. And in 97, I was again at I Will Not Fall, and Bruce did the Unity Cabaret again, and I put music actually to some of the poetry of people who were there, including Bruce's poetry. And then later on, after that, and we worked actually with Jeffrey Rome's book, The History of Queen Street.
Angels to 999.
And we started up producing actually Angels of 999. And I came into Friendly Spike at that point as stage manager, had to pick up actually a role as Winston O, which I then later developed a little bit more when we did actually the Wall tour, or the Wall is Alive with the Sounds of the Mad. So that
the
was.
The walls are alive with the sounds of mad people.
Mad people. That can make a big difference. But that is. So, but through that exposure and all this kind of stuff, and developing actually more, including actually Father and Daughter, which was my first really play, which is about a Holocaust survivor and how he deals with his daughter.
Yeah.
And what some kind of difficulties came out there, and to create actually understanding of the whole kind of situation of the Holocaust.
And you had become from the same town,
Yeah, it's actually basically my family comes really close out of that area where actually the father in that play came
that's
from.
That's right. So one of the actors at Friendly Spike, and she's also one of the directors, Marlene Charney, is a child of a Holocaust survivor. And so she wanted to put her story into a play. And she did a one-person show where she played herself and her father, father and daughter. When Heinz heard the reading of it, it came out that the father was from the same town as Heinz's family was from, and he was drawn to the production. And it's very interesting because Marlene, as a child of a Holocaust survivor, she identifies really easily with psychiatric and consumer survivors, because a lot of the issues that many of us face, my own opinion is because of the trauma. But anyway, sorry for interjecting, but that's an important link.
That's an important link. And
you directed that play.
Yeah. I directed that play, actually, and it was going up road. It was actually shown in London, England.
Yeah. So Survivors of the Shoah. That was a big thing.
In 2001, where that happened, 2001, 2002, I did actually, with Friendly Spike, with a community agency, Houseling Community Homes, we did actually a kind of play creation project, which was called Coffee Cabaret. And that was actually really good because it helped us increase actually the pool of actors. When you go out in the community, you can draw actors or people who are interested. And I connected to the psychiatric survival movement in the same kind of way, not just Friendly Spike, but there are several links to the movement. One of them was to the Patients' Council, which was, the Queen Street Patients' Council. Queen Street, the big white house out there, where they push you in and never let you come out. But people have heard about that, so.
They also sometimes, when you ask, you tell them, you plead, I need to get in there, you got to take me. They say no, sometimes. that's really helpful. I'm sorry, I got to go.
In 1995, we just got started. Stuart and Eric were a part of that, and some of that activism in the Patients' Council and otherwise transferred itself into fierce activism, which then ended up actually in the theater as well. So, the other link actually is through the Leadership Project, which we started actually to provide consumer survivors with some leadership training that they learned actually how to run actually an agency or be responsible for a community agency. And that actually did go a little bit further. With the Patients' Council, we started actually the first recovery conference in Toronto, actually with Judy Chamberlain, which is a writer, an American writer, who put a lot of stuff out, as well as Lauren Mosher, who was at that point in town. And he is actually the father of Soteria House, which is an alternative kind of way to deal with psychiatric medication.
Around what time? Around what year? 1972.
Wow. Yeah. So, and we wanted to teach actually survivors to. So we put another recovery conference with the Leadership Project in 2003, which was successful as well. But through the SARS crisis, we had actually to recover, and instead of having 3 days, we had only 1 day, and we had to choose actually a different location. But in 2006, there was something really great happening at the conference. We had somebody from England there. His name was Rufus May. And Rufus staged actually Bed Push in England.
From
Brighton
to Brighton? Brighton to Bedlam. I can't
remember. No, to Brighton.
Okay.
To Brighton. So to bring actually people who are locked up in the hospital out into the community, or back into the community.
That's right.
So, and that was picked up by Friendly Spike, and then
Parkdale Community Legal Services, and then we created actually psychiatric
he
pride,
challenged us. He
mad pride,
us.
All this kind of stuff came out of, we had mad pride before, we had a day, or we had a weekend, and now we have a week, so it's a development, and that came out of that. So, in between, actually, in my life, I'm a recording artist. I did a lot of stuff, including actually writing as well. And one of the things I wrote is actually a collection of poetry, which is called "Excuse Me, My Name Is You." And you is not like the all you. You is why. You, which is Edmund Yu, who was shot by the police in on the Spadina loop when there was no streetcars but buses going around.
He was a homeless psychiatric
survivor. So that was
basically
over 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And my involvement with Friendly Spike in that kind of gave actually the foundation in 2001 to start up actually developing based on the rant of Don White's.
Don White's rant, Nameless Homeless.
Yeah, Nameless Homeless. And
it's like a 20-page rant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we used that actually, and we remounted the show in 2007 to actually really bring it back during Mad Pride to the people. That and we did that actually in the Parkdale Library in the basement. It was a great show, and we had a lot of people there. So there's a load of that in there, but still, and we see that through theater, through the scrapbook, we really remember the people who have participated over the years. If that's Edmund Yu, we remember. If that's Michael Elegant, we remember. If that's Bruce Cattle, we remember. And we have it in here.
Mm-hmm.
And so that brings us to the next part of our presentation.
Another dead psych survivor at the hands of police. Wrestling with Fear by Henrik Kartna, July 2013. His name was Michael Elegant, and his story helps to inspire mine. My name is Henrik Kartna. I'm a playwright, actor, and mental health activist. In my play, Wrestling with Fear, produced by our company for Mad Culture Night 2013, I got a chance to express my own situation within the guise of a character named John. When the play opens, John is in his kitchen reading about Michael Elegant in the newspaper. Here's an example. Another vigil, this time for Michael Elegant, shot for wielding a pair of scissors and wearing a hospital gown. 11 against 1. Can't beat those odds. But hey, maybe things will change. Maybe this vigil will wake us up. But then again, maybe it won't. Later in the play, I discussed this with my psychiatrist, who I call Dr. Follow the Rules.
Go.
Doctor, did you read the Toronto Star today?
I
had a busy morning. No time for current events. But John, we are talking about you.
Yeah, but there was an article on Elegant.
Ah, yes, that poor man. Such a tragedy.
People held a vigil, retracing his steps from East General to the convenience store where he took the scissors along Woodington Avenue towards Coxwell and Danforth. They even stopped at 55 Division. Bill Blair, the police chief, says they are reviewing their procedures, but they say that every time.
You know, the police officer had to protect himself. We have discussed this kind of thing before, haven't we? Everyone is accountable for their own action. Social rules govern us all.
Yeah, but if Elegant is accountable, so too is the police officer who fired the shot, and he was cleared.
Yeah.
My new work, What's Next the Big C, being developed for the company's 2015 season, like Wrestling with Fear,
this play links personal troubles to public issues. Tom, the central character, is a psychiatric patient who is now forced to deal with a physical problem as well as a mental problem. However, Tom's situation is not an isolated one. This is a burgeoning public health issue, a crisis, in fact. My new play discusses an alarming spike in the death rate of mentally ill people who smoke. Tom, the central character, is someone who has been labeled with schizophrenia and who is a heavy smoker. Tom and his doctor debate the issue in this example from a scene from my play. But another character, a peer of Tom's, reminds him of a new idea. "What do you want me to say? I'm sorry. I told you. I want to take responsibility for my health and get well again. I want to change."
"And I told you, change may not be enough. Statistically, it might be too late. But for the sake of pragmatism, we'll start you on a no-smoking program. It's a shame, really. As a mentally ill baby boomer, you have been warned about this by all the health experts. Like so many of your cohort, you neglected your health and have clogged up the healthcare system."
The actor returns to the group. Another assumes the role of Don, a peer of Tom.
"Tom, I get that you're afraid of being one of those dead, mentally ill baby boomers that your research is talking about, but you have the power not to be. You're a smart fellow, and just because Dr. Rothman tells you it's too late doesn't mean that you have to accept it. You know that. Your idea of quitting smoking as a means of boycotting the tobacco companies, putting them out of business, is a slap in her pessimistic, judgmental face."
"That's it.
That's it.
Thank you.
Any last conclusion?"
"We can conclude that we concluded."
Okay, can we give them a round of applause, please?
Sure.